Welcome to KSKA's A Closer Look. I'm Len Anderson. On this edition of A Closer Look, we profile Dr. Ted Mala, the director of the Traditional Healing Clinic and the Office of Tribal Affairs at South Central Foundation in Anchorage. Recently, KSKA and Alaska Public Radio Network presented a short news feature about Dr. Mala's career in circumpolar and traditional medicine. We now present more from the interview that provided the basis for the aired story. It began with Ted Mala discussing how, at an early age, he suffered a loss that completely changed his life.
My father died, and my mother died at a very early age. My father died. He had what we call mitral insufficiency. He had bad heart valves. Because as a child in the early 1900s in Alaska, we had a lot of rheumatic fever, and he had rheumatic fever, and that ultimately damaged his heart valves, and unfortunately, he died a few years before the heart valves came out. He'd still be alive if that happened today. My mother died of pneumonia a year later, but really, I sincerely believe she died of a broken heart. I see that with many people that dearly love each other. And she gave up the will to live. And lo and behold, I landed up in boarding school. And it was almost like being taken to another planet. It was frightening. Couldn't really run away. You're separated from all your family. And you had a great education. But like all people in boarding school, there were a lot of pluses and minuses.
And you settled on becoming a doctor when?
It's a long story, but I never had a role model for medicine. My father was the first Native American movie star in Hollywood, and we'd go back and forth from our village in Kotzebue back to Hollywood, but never had the idea of medicine. Ultimately, after going through to school, I actually thought I would like to do something in medicine. I had a job as an orderly. That was a great incentive to do something a little better in the health profession. I thought, well, I think I might like to be a nurse because maybe I could acquire that. And I went to nursing school for 2 weeks and quit because it wasn't my concept of nursing. I mean, not of nursing, of medicine. It wasn't what I thought about in terms of medicine. I've never really told anyone that, but it was hard for me because I had no parents. I was out of boarding school and didn't really have anyone to look up to other than relatives that were very far away and kind of maybe am the classical raised by wolves example and learned to make my own family and learned to do a lot of things myself. So I was in the hospital and I met different nurses and ultimately doctors. And one of them finally said, well, you weren't very happy as an orderly. You could probably do better than that. You weren't happy trying nursing. So why don't you just go to medical school? And I said, ooh, I never thought of that. And I applied. And much to my surprise, I always had the feeling, well, if it was supposed to be, it will happen. So it's like you can't win the lottery unless you buy a ticket. So I said, well, if I get accepted, that means I should do it. If I don't, then I'll go do something else. Serendipity worked, and I was accepted and whisked into another world.
Where did you go to boarding school?
I went to boarding school in Los Angeles. It was a very strict school. It was a Catholic school. It was a military school. It was run by not only Catholic nuns, but Irish Catholic nuns. All of a sudden, you know, I was in a quasi-happy world of being Native and doing things that people do as a child, and then transported to boarding school and at second grade going on military drills and carrying a gun, a rifle. Which caused me to wonder, even when I was doing that, is how did I get here and what am I doing here? But unfortunately, at that time in my life, I had no control over my own destiny. You just kind of had to do what you had to do, and we were raised as good Americans because those schools were schools of training people to be good Americans, and I hope I'm a good American. And that's how my destiny started.
And part of your destiny was to be the first Alaska Native doctor?
Well, I didn't know that. Actually, I'm the first male. The first female is a woman who is a dear friend of mine by the name of Loretta Snyder from Nome. She graduated many, many years ago from the University of Washington. I met her at a meeting of American Indian physicians, and we became great friends. And it turns out that not only did she have a medical degree, but she also had a law degree. And she was a collector of degrees. But the ironic part is she never came back to Alaska and really never practiced. She got the degrees but didn't do anything with them and really stayed in California. She and her husband, they had an engineering business and were quite comfortable. I just would see her now and then, but the very sad thing is she never came back. And much to my surprise, when I was doing my training at the old Native Hospital in 1975 to find out that I was the first male and the first one really to come home. So that was a surprise. And nothing's planned. It just, you're just thrown into the gene pool and somehow twirled around and you come out the other end not knowing what to expect. And that's what happened to me.
You're listening to A Closer Look Profile of Dr. Ted Mala, an Alaska Native physician who has devoted his life to examining health issues particular to the circumpolar region, as well as combining traditional healing techniques with that of Western medicine. Mala next described how his curiosity about Russia led to his long involvement in circumpolar health and research.
I always had a curiosity because I'm not only Eskimo, but I'm Russian. My mother was born in Russia. There was a conference here in Anchorage in the early 70s where we had a global environmental conference and the Russians came over. And I introduced myself and I said, I've always had this dream to go find out what's across the Bering Sea and maybe learn something about medicine over there. It turns out that the man that I had met, Vladimir Panchenkin, was the secretary of the Profsoyuz, the Soviet Medical Workers Union. They invited me to come to meet them and come to Russia. And I was met by these Russian people and really fell in love with the people. I didn't care much for the politics because my mother really ran for her life in 1917 to get out of there. But I fell in love with the people. I started meeting with a lot of medical people, and one of the questions they said, we're so happy to meet someone from Alaska and all that. They said, but we really have one question we don't understand about Alaska. And the question was, do you really want a nuclear war? One of the few times in my life I couldn't talk. And once we got through that and the toast began, I think we convinced them that we don't want it. They don't want it. And so I subsequently got involved with Physicians for Social Responsibility and working against nuclear war. That was kind of my introduction. And then I kept telling the Russians, well, you know, my real dream is just to get over to the other side of the Bering. So it took a number of years to win their trust. When I finally did, I was actually allowed to live in Novosibirsk. I got a fellowship from the Fogarty Foundation to go live in Russia and learn about the health system, and I did. I wanted to use medical research to kind of open the door to allow us to go back and forth and to learn from each other, because years before that, I had gone to Sweden, and I'm one of the founders of the International Union for Circumpolar Health, and we signed a document in Sweden forming this International Union for Circumpolar Health, which still exists. And so when I was the director of the Institute for Circumpolar Health, I went around to the northern countries and lived and worked in Sweden, Denmark, Finland, Iceland, Greenland, Norway, Canada, Russia, and of course, Alaska. But the biggest chunk of this circumpolar was Russia, was Soviet Union at the time. And I figured, well, you know, what can we learn from them? What can they learn from us? And especially with problems of adaptation of cold, adaptation to light, darkness, seasonal affective disorder, all kinds of things. And I spent many years trying to do research with all these countries. And we had these circumpolar meetings every 2 or 3 years, and we'd all get together and talk about our results.
So what did you find? What do we share as Northerners?
The way I looked at it was really from a literally global view, a satellite view. And when you go way, way, way up, a mile or two up, and look at it, take a picture of the Earth, lo and behold, there's no geopolitical lines. That taught me these diseases, these problems that we all share, are not related to geopolitical lines, but rather to the environment. So as you go more north, different problems occur. So we tried for years trying to figure out how do we divide people in the north, because one medicine didn't fit all. We would see that when lots of programs would come from the States up to Alaska. They all work, but the always exception, except Alaska. They don't work in Alaska because we don't have roads, because we don't have good communications, because we, and the litany goes on. We had a UN working task force that was convened to figure out how do we actually come up with remedies or recommendations for the North. So the North was divided into four categories of people. One was Native peoples, indigenous peoples. Second was what we called short-term residents, people had just come to Alaska or to the North, perhaps for a period maybe of under 7 years. Then we had long-term residents, and we had transient workers. So if you think about it, the transient workers, construction, oil line, all those people had different problems. They would be here for 2 or 3 weeks, and then they'd go back to wherever they came from, which caused a number of problems, actually, not only disease or medicine-wise, but also psychological and all the things that went on with things like that. So we divided into four areas, and then we could begin to get our arms around how to address certain things. We found common problems with circadian rhythm, with long winters, even with long light. We would look at adaptation to the cold. We would look at metabolism of alcohol and other physiological kinds of things. We would look at the physiology of people coming up and adapting to the north, and how long would it actually take to adapt. You see the classic example of people coming to the north for 2 or 3 years, especially teachers, and you could almost predict which ones are going to make it and which ones aren't. The ones that arrive in a village first time in Alaska with several boxes of full-spectrum light bulbs will probably not make it. And I've seen that over the years. Then you see different kinds of relationships which bud in the bush and end once they leave, and you look at how people adapt and survive in the north. And it's been really, really interesting, to the point where almost you can make some predictions. And yet we still haven't really developed a great system for screening and preparing people to come to the north. One of the problems in the north that I find that is extremely critical amongst Native peoples is stability of medical staff in regional hospitals. It's really hard. You know, I can remember, as can you, from Kotzebue, of the doctors that have been there 8 or 10 years and really made a mark on the community, versus what we call locums, which are just people that fill in, would come for a few weeks and gone. And that stability's been gone, and I see that to this day, the problems that result in the hospital. They're good people, but they're learning to adapt as it is, and they haven't built that connection with Native people. As you know, it takes a while to earn people's trust, and so things go missed because we're a culture that doesn't say a lot verbally, as you well know, and people might just, you know, give you the look or the eye or whatever, and that would answer a lot of things. And a lot of people miss those signals, and so they miss a lot of significant things people are trying to tell you about their health and so on. That was consistent across the North. But I was thinking at the time that they had just developed the responsibilities and rules or guidelines for the North, and NANA, I think, came out with them first, about respect for elders and culture and all those things. And
the Inupiaq Iliqua'sat.
Exactly. The Iliqua'sat was a wonderful, wonderful thing, which all cultures have adopted right now. We even had a camp that did that, kept those values Sibidemic. Going. Exactly. Yes, thank you. Sikinhivik was wonderful, and all the things that are around with it were truly wonderful. But I traveled around the world and went to all these countries just to find out that the best thing you could do is what we were already doing. In fact, I would tell other people of what we do, and they were just amazed by all the things that went with it, Inupiaq Iliqua'sat and the rules for living. And it turns out they're really universal rules that every culture respects each other and so on and lives together.
You're listening to KSKA's A Closer Look, a program where we can present in a fuller fashion a topic that we featured in a shorter news story. Today, we're presenting an interview conducted with Dr. Ted Mala, a former commissioner of Health and Social Services during Wally Hickel's second term as governor. Dr. Mala is currently the director of the Traditional Healing Clinic and the Office of Tribal Affairs at South Central Foundation in Anchorage. If his father's condition and death nudged Mala toward becoming a medical doctor, and his mother's background, in part, lured him to visit Russia and eventually take up circumpolar health, his father's family history of native healers in the Kotzebue-Buckland area likely started him toward the directorship of South Central Foundation's Traditional Healing Clinic. It's the totality of the traditional native healing process that captures Mala's enthusiasm.
If you think about a group of people, Alaskan Natives, living in perhaps one of the most hostile environments in the world, and were able to sustain themselves through clothing and diet and healing and medicine and other things, you can't deny that the experience of these people sustained people way before any of these new technological wonders came about. And so there's a lot of knowledge and a lot of wisdom in there that treats not only the physical, but the spiritual, the mental, and the emotional. I mean, it treats the whole person, not just part of the person. When South Central Foundation was just getting started, and that was some 20 years ago, Catherine Gottlieb and I had taken Catherine to Russia as one of my people in my big groups of 80 people I take over there at a time. And we were discussing South Central Foundation and its future. And from the very beginning, we both had shared the interest in traditional healing. She said, well, once we are able to get funded and take over some of these things, even from Indian Health, we want to do it, and would you direct it? And we had this discussion many, many years ago. Ultimately, I came back and started directing it for the Native Hospital. Traditional healing has a lot to offer. There are two forms of medicine here. There's a Native way of doing medicine, and then there's the traditional Western way. My role is being the bridge across the bearing kind of thing right now, and trying to bring the two together so that people will be comfortable with each other. We have a system here that requires patients to get a referral before they come in to see us. And the referral is really not for the sake of the patient, but it's the sake of the Western practitioners to kind of get them to come and watch their patients and see what we do and come up with a plan together for the healing of that individual. We have a thing called the healing circle, which we've talked about for a long time. Dr. Bob Morkan wrote some papers on this years ago, and basically the concept was you have a circle of people, and you have the patient, or as we call our people, customer owners, sitting there, envision the circle around you of people that were trained in different arts and medical arts and physical therapy and mental health and so on. And you talking about what your situation is and they giving their best advice on how to approach different kinds of problems And ultimately, you are your own physician. You make the decision of what advice you're going to take and what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. And so the power shift moves from thou shalt of the provider to the individual. The ultimate result is responsibility for your own life. So in the old days, we were taught by Indian Health and the military and the BIA that we're from the government, we're here to help you, we know what's best for you. So a lot of things happen based on that. With time, the power shift, be it economic or the coming of us being recognized as shareholders and corporations, I don't know exactly what happened, but I'm sure they're all contributing factors. But the power shift actually changed. And my guess is the political and economic force was the thing that really changed that power shift. And all of a sudden, people were looking for different ways to do things and ways that were uniquely Native. So what makes us a Native hospital? Is it the building? Is it the art? Is it the name? And my hypothesis is none of the above. What makes us unique that you can't find at Regional or Providence or Elmendorf or Mayo Clinic or wherever? And the answer is, in my mind, traditional healing. You won't find that anywhere. In fact, we're the only accredited traditional healing clinic in the United States.
As Dr. Mala delves more deeply into the traditional healing he directs, he notes how the philosophy of Inupiaq traditional healer, the late Della Keats from Northwest Alaska, is carried on in the mission of South Central Foundation.
I remember the words of Della Keats telling me many times how she grew up with my dad and how they remember lots of things, but how the power of her words were convincing by their own transparency. They were true words. We have to heal the body. We have to heal the soul. We're only conduits for Creator to do all that. And that's why the mission statement of South Central Foundation is that our mission is to help one heal one's own spiritually, mentally, physically, and emotionally. When we have a patient, we sit down and we start from the beginning. Who are you? Who are your relatives? Where are you from? We connect on many, many different levels. And then we begin the journey to find out how to do this. It could be a person that has lived in a village, or it could be an urban person that genetically has Native roots but has no idea what the culture is. And we connect on every single different levels. And we were able to break through in a lot of areas that other people haven't. Part of it is because we take the time. We have the privilege of spending an hour with our patients as opposed to others who only have 10 or 15 minutes. We talk to them slowly and let things flow out as opposed to a machine gun approach where you go through a list of questions and they're really not sure sometimes what happened, or they're too shy to talk or whatever. But I've seen people totally transformed by taking more of a Native approach, taking your time. Again, providers would like to do this, but they can't because they're booked every 15 minutes. But we can. We don't bring in any income in this hospital. We're funded by South Central Foundation, that's board of directors and the president have made the decision that even though it's an expensive service, we are going to fund this because people want it. We have 4 or 5 traditional doctors, and we're like 6 weeks out on appointments. That's how popular it is, of all ages, of young, of very old, cancer patients, end-of-life patients, kids struggling through all kinds of things. And the nice thing is we see resolution where we actually tell them, well, you don't have to come back anymore. You're doing fine.
One of your major goals right now is to pass the torch.
Absolutely.
But maybe have one hand on it.
Oh, yeah. I didn't say let it go completely. We just kind of pass it. We also have a traditional healing garden. We try to teach people that Creator has put on this earth everything that we really need in terms of medicines, and we try to complement Western medicine with some of the plant medicines. We don't prescribe anything right now because we don't know all the interactions, but tribal doctors use these out in the villages quite a bit and with great success. So again, these are things that really have science hasn't caught up with us all the way, but that's happening. And I think the merit of it is strong enough that I see it happening in many other tribes. I see the United States in general moving towards complementary alternative medicine, that it's a multi-billion dollar industry. The problem is that people want the form without the substance. When we pick a plant, we just don't pick a plant. People say a prayer. It's like natives hunting. You thank Creator for this food, and you thank the spirit of the animal and so on, to letting their life be taken for your good and your sustenance. And prayer is a great part of that. And plants are not randomly harvested, and there are certain times and certain parts of the plant that are used. So we have a traditional healing garden here, which we try to teach people on. This is all, and they were all plants that are indigenous to Alaska, which exception of maybe some sweet peas, which we like to grow and give to our patients. Everything out there has a reason. And as you get older, one begins to see less and less randomness in life, even with the people that you meet every day, whether they're native or not native. And as people pass on and this circle becomes smaller and smaller, we tend to hold on to each other more and try to do interviews like this and get the next generation ready.
You've been listening to KSKA's A Closer Look, featuring Dr. Ted Mala. In addition to his current position as the director of the Traditional Healing Clinic and the Office of Tribal Affairs at South Central Foundation in Anchorage, Dr. Mala has served as Commissioner of Health and Social Services and played a key role in fostering circumpolar health research. A Closer Look is a production of KSKA Anchorage. For KSKA, this is Len Anderson, thanking you for listening.